Welcome to The Ether. Today is Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by LuArt. LuArt is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. LuArt provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, exploring the Tesseract, NFTs as investment assets with CeFi. Let's take a listen.
Good morning, gang.
Good morning, man.
Hello, hello.
Oh, man, it's an early one.
Is everyone here that's supposed to be?
Yeah, I think we're good from our end.
Okay, maybe give a couple minutes here for people to load up the space a little bit. I was kind of playing around on Random Earth, and I was playing around on LuArt a little bit, just to kind of look at the Luna Bills marketplace entries and such, having never purchased anything on any of them. So I'll kind of pull things up from maybe the total, like, NFT newbie perspective, I guess, that might be fun to get some questions in there that might entice people who aren't into NFTs at the moment. And everyone here, it's Coleman, O'Hara, and let's see, we've got Guy. And who's got the host mic here?
I think the host is actually going to just stay muted. I think they're just hosting.
Oh, just hanging out. Yeah. Okay. All right, cool.
You guys, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, how's it going, Tom?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. I was just having some problems with my headphones, so I just switched to a different mic, that's all. So, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, you sound great.
Perfect.
Well, I think folks are strolling in. Maybe we can kind of get started a bit. Like I said, I'm kind of I understand NFTs, understand the entire principle behind them, all of that. And maybe my aversion, perhaps, to playing the game of NFT collecting and investing, I think has to do with the fact that really I've sort of done this before back in the late 90s with gaming related sort of like acquisitions and sales, if it were, where, you know, digital assets, you know, began with getting sold on eBay. And that was kind of a complicated process of exchanging things. There were no, you know, exchanges specific to that sort of thing early on. And made a lot of money doing that long ago in video gaming. And maybe the reason why I did not delve deep into it was because it just reminded me of how much time it consumed for me. And now, you know, you could argue, well, you know, he hangs out in spaces and screws around a fair amount. You know, why not do this too? But I don't know, maybe I'm old enough now to sort of realize maybe the depth of how much time I want to spend with something. And the early projects on Terra were heavily, you know, I guess like maybe Discord community and like that. It's kind of that. I don't know. There was kind of an extra time that needed to be spent kind of, you know, playing in those areas that I wasn't willing to like put up. Maybe you guys can like clarify what your vision is for Lunables and like, how do you envision people getting into NFTs sort of quote unquote early who don't necessarily have the time to like be involved in the earliest part of the community, like in Discord and such?
I think in fairness to the Terra NFT community, we seem to have come a hell of a long way since those days of grinding in Discords. I mean, I try to get about as much as I can into other projects and obviously sort of experience what those guys are doing in terms of, you know, attracting new users to their projects. And I mean, we were one of the earliest ones, I think the second or third ever NFT project to launch in the space. And I think we've learned a lot, you know, since back then. And of course, we did have that kind of grinding. You know, we did have that in place at that time in our Discord. And, you know, in hindsight, now looking back, perhaps it wasn't the best, form of onboarding or perhaps sort of attracting people into the project at that time. But at that time, we didn't really know much different, to be fair. And we were kind of, all of us, Galactic Punks ourselves, and, I think we were the two most prevalent at that time, were just trying to find our feet and do what we thought was best. But yeah, I mean, you make a valid point. I mean, in hindsight, I think, you know, and what we're seeing traditionally, I think more so now in the space, is that, we are moving away from that grinding mentality and that kind of getting people into Discord, and you have to jump over X amount of hurdles and to be included in our project. And I think that's a good thing. You know, I am seeing other projects look at other ideas and solutions with regards to that, be it, not necessarily traditional whitelisting, but I am definitely seeing other sort of community engagement activities, which, you know, are a little bit more relaxed than perhaps what, you know, some of us did in the earlier days, which, yeah, I think that is a much more, that is a positive move forward for the space, definitely in terms of onboarding new users into the NFT marketplace, as it were, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, there was the kind of rush also to build, I guess, that early, capitalize in a sense on the early growth velocity of, you know, NFTs in the crypto space too. So I can understand the sort of like the times are are different than they are perhaps now, and maybe different than what they're going to be like 3 years from now. So, you know, some of the things that worked in sort of the early OG days, like, may not work for the general public, you know, farther out. So, but I was looking at just the, we can kind of move on from that. I don't want to dwell on that too much necessarily, but I was sort of just looking at Lunables from, you know, just the perspective of a fresh, fresh set of eyes, so to speak. And I kind of looking at, I was peeking at Random Earth and also at LuArt a little bit earlier this morning. And tell me a little bit about like original Lunables versus like this new collection where you guys did like a 3D version. Is this something where if I had a 2D version, then I can now like turn it into a 3D version, or is this like two totally separate pathways? Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah. So there's definitely, it's a single pathway to get started with Lunables. So like you mentioned, we launched our initial 2D collection, you know, back in late 2021. And our collection that just entered public mint today, that's been, you know, airdropping and minting over the last couple of days, is the Tesseract NFT, which is not like a separate 3D bull. So there are 10,069 total 2D Lunables in the collection. And if you acquire a Tesseract, you can basically bond that Tesseract NFT to your Lunable NFT. And then once the Tesseract is bonded, you can use the app on our website, lunables.com, to swap back and forth between 2D and 3D at will. When you swap back and forth, so say you bond the Tesseract and swap your 2D Lunable for the 3D version with the same traits and metadata, the 2D version of your Lunable NFT is locked away in the Tesseract smart contract, and you receive the 3D version. And then at any time, you can switch back if you want to. So there will only ever be 10,069 Lunables out there in some you know, ratio of 2D and 3D.
Oh, I see. So when I'm going on the website right now or on Random Earth at the moment, so when I'm looking at these two separate collections, there's technically only one of each potential design. Either it's in 2D or 3D at that moment. Is that
exactly
right?
Exactly. So like Lunable, you know, number 2001. You'll never be able to find that 2D bull and that 3D bull, you know, listed at the same time, because one will be locked away in the Tesseract smart contract. The other one will be owned by someone. You brought up how right now there's a Lunables collection and a Lunables 3D collection on Random Earth. That was just kind of a function of time, honestly. The goal and what we should be able to do here very shortly is we are planning to merge those two collections, work with Random Earth, work with Luart to merge those into a single Lunables collection that just displays 2D and 3D.
Cool. So the Tesseract then that's being talked about now, so was there not a way to swap between these before the Tesseract was created, or how did that work?
Correct. Before the Tesseract, it was 2D Lunables, and that was basically it. You know, you had your 2D Lunable that got you into the community, and then of course we did launch our Baby Bulls collection, which was kind of like a stealth collection launch that we just kind of that was like a full all proceeds to charity, like a 5 UST mint cost. But other than that, yeah, it's just kind of been, it was just a 2D Lunable. There was no way to go 3D. The Tesseract NFT really unlocked that. You know, we were working with artists to, you know, build out the 3D versions. And then I don't know how, if you've happened to see our Medium article, but we were also working with like a Luniverse and an additional kind of 3D rendering artists and stuff like that to build out metaverse compatible, like, gameplay versions of your 3D Lunables as well, that only Tesseract bonded Lunables will have in the future.
Oh, got it. So the Tesseract itself is its own NFT, or is that just a feature of the website where people can swap?
It is its own NFT. So it's there are 10,069 Lunable NFTs, and there are 10,069 Tesseract NFTs. And an interesting part of that is that whenever a Tesseract NFT is bonded to your Lunable NFT, the Tesseract NFT is consumed, destroyed, whatever you want to call it. It goes away. You can't use it ever again. So like by nature, it's a deflationary supply of Tesseract NFTs as people bond them to their Lunables to unlock the 2D to 3D and, you know, swapping back and forth functionality and the metaverse compatibility that we're building out. The supply of Tesseracts will just continue going down.
Got it. Yeah, you know, I think of this a little bit from the... Coleman, did you have something to say?
Yeah, no, it's good. I was just going to add to what O'Hara was saying, because on that subject, I did pull some interesting data this morning on the Tesseracts, and it's quite right what O'Hara was saying, that there are only 10,069, and of the 6,000 that have been claimed or minted in the last 48 hours by our Lunables holders, interestingly, only 1,794 have actually been bonded or burned, which means that holders, approximately 4,200, but basically they're sitting on those Tesseracts, which I mean, that's huge. That's like 71% of all Tesseracts are now currently being held. So for me, this indicates two things. One, either a lot of investors are realizing when it comes to them that they're deflationary and obviously in nature, or two, they read what we wrote about, you know, deciding carefully, you know, make your decision carefully when you bond them to your Tesseract. And quite a few people are theorizing that they've got perhaps additional utility after, not only just to convert obviously from 2D to 3D. So my DMs have been filling up with questions of that nature. But yeah, I find it very interesting that a lot of, 71% of the Tesseracts that have been claimed or minted are currently being held. Very, very interesting.
So right now I acquire a Tesseract on here. How exactly? Like, what would I do? I just go to, like, is there a part of the marketplace that contains them, or?
So
you just go to the lunaballs.com website, just simply connect your wallet. And then if you head over to the mint page, it'll be the rightmost tab and it will just say public mint. And then you basically have the ability to mint up to 5 Tesseracts per wallet.
I see. So, but the minting process, I would have to own a Lunaball and then do this, or like, what is the?
You could at this point just mint a Tesseract in public mint, but so there were multiple stages, right? So we kicked this off with an airdrop to Lunaball holders where they could come and claim a Tesseract for free for a period of time. Then we yesterday went through a holders mint phase where only people that own, you know, held a Lunaball in their wallet could mint a Tesseract. Today, about 15 minutes ago, we moved into the public stage of the mint where any wallet can go and mint up to 5 Tesseracts.
So step by step, like, I would first go and get the Lunaball that I like on a marketplace, and then I come back to the website to do this process.
Yeah. Yeah, you could get the Tesseract first and then get the Lunaball, but yeah, either or.
Oh, the order doesn't really matter at that point.
Because you acquire the Tesseract through minting, and then you, through the rupture page on our site, then you bond it, and then you swap it.
The Tesseract essentially is its own NFT and really will be also bought and sold on the marketplaces as well.
Yeah, the Tesseract will have its own standalone collection on like Random Earth, Luart, etc. And then, like I mentioned earlier, we'll be combining the Lunaballs and Lunaballs 3D collections into a single collection.
Now, do you think of the Tesseract, like, does it have its own regenerative, or not regenerative, but, you know, the, like, does it have its own combinations of, like, art that goes with it, or is it more just like every single Tesseract looks the same?
Every single Tesseract has the same animation, and they're actually fungible NFTs. So there's no differentiating one Tesseract to another. But at the root of it, they all do the same thing, which is sort of enable that 3D integration for your ball into the metaverse.
Got it. So it's like it's basically a one-time sort of upgrade utility, but you can, like, there's no difference between them. So there's not a specific reason outside of, like, future people wanting it to necessarily, like, collect it as a piece of art in itself. Although I guess you could, even if it's like, there, you know, since it's a limited quantity, I suppose you could hold it just for the idea that you just want to hold one too.
I mean, you'll be one of the 10, you know, or 20 or whatever left holding one.
It's going to be a Do Kwon type situation where I think Coleman has said he wants to be the last person holding a Tesseract. So
that's true.
Interesting.
I was thinking about exactly this question this morning and exactly what you just said, and it's very interesting because when you think about the Bored Ape Yacht Club, the BAYC guys over there, and when they produced the Mega Mutant Ape Serums, and the highest selling price for a Mega Mutant Ape Serum is about $5.8 million around there. And I think the highest sale for the original NFTs is, I wouldn't say only because it's not really an only, but 1.4 million. And when you think that, the additional bolt-on NFT, which was produced after the fact, you know, more than likely because of its deflationary nature, much like the Tesseracts, are going for up to 3 or 4 times the price of the original NFT itself. And it was just a little bit of trivia that I came across this morning that it blew me away, and I thought, yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is like an important I look at the overall, you know, macroscopic sort of view of the, like, I don't know what you want to call it, maybe like the OG NFT space for each chain. So you've got like these sort of like OG status symbols on each chain. And then you additionally end up having this concept of like chain versus chain competition, because you know how everyone's sort of tribal. You know, we did a lot of this sort of thing back in the days of EverQuest, which was kind of a multiplayer online game where it just so happens that I was kind of in a guild that was like the most sort of at the like the apex of really all multiplayer online guilds ever at that time. And it just so happened I was in that group as just a point of like maybe luck. But then like my video game character used to be posted all over the universe as sort of like news, so to speak. You know, such and such character got this and such item. And like, and what was interesting about it is like between, so in the game itself, like in that particular game, there were sort of everyone knew who those kind of OG guilds were and like what the symbolism of their equipment what was. And what was missing back in those days was the, like, there was no like art element to it. It was just like you were cool if you got it first. That was really the only sort of, you know, street cred that you got from it. And what ended up happening was is that eventually that then guilds started becoming a little bit more multi-game, like they'd go to different games and but that name would sort of carry forward. And a lot of times what would happen is that would sort of die off because, you know, maybe you were great at one game, but your guild didn't take off in the next, which is interesting. So it to me is like the NFT sort of because like Luna Bulls, Galactic Punks, and some of these are more like they're designed, I guess, if I'm not mistaken, like you correct me if I'm wrong, but like they're designed in a sense to be like, you know, like OG status kinds of imagery and like evoke the idea that like historically I was there, right? And this sort of marks my passing at that time. And, you know, that kind of increases as the ecosystem gets bigger and, it, you know, these things become more and more gamified and people are comparing chain to chain. There is an important element of you really do want the Galactic Punks / Luna Bulls or whatever. You want them to actually achieve insane valuations indirectly as a sort of like, I don't know.
Almost like a status reflection on the community of the chain on the, or something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. It almost is like, yeah, exactly. It becomes a status sort of like for the chain. And it's like, oh, well, you know, the Terra folks, well, they're poor or not celebrities because they don't have, you know, the status symbols of their chain as popular as those on Solana or Ethereum or whatever. So there's definitely that kind of like tribal instinct to compare those, in my view. It's kind of like looking at it from outside and having been in that sort of like gaming, you know, like street cred type of like environment. Have you guys thought about that from that like cross-chain influence perspective?
Oh, totally. I mean, it's funny that you bring up kind of the gaming connection. As my personal background, I grew up a relatively hardcore gamer. You know, and the concept of guilds and gaming, just like you said, is so close to one-to-one for me with like NFT communities, and in general, just like crypto communities on chain. But yeah, so like to me, like also my background is like working in gaming, kind of software startups, and so like one, I love the community, I love I love gaming. I love just building cool. Fell in love in gaming with building communities. And when I started becoming more personally interested in crypto, it kind of just transitioned over to that space really easily, where it's like, oh, I can build essentially the same sort of community here on crypto. And the cross-chain aspect is interesting. So like I've essentially personally, because I really only started going deep into crypto on Terra. And so I kind of also by extension went deep into NFTs on Terra. Then I've dabbled with some NFT projects on other chains, but never gone near as deep as I have on Terra. And for me, one of the reasons for that, obviously there are chains like Polygon or Sol where I can jump on and mint some NFTs. But because I'm not like invested in those chains, I'm not that interested. I've considered Ethereum, you know, getting into projects there, because it's obviously where like the biggest user base, network effect, liquidity is, et cetera, but at least currently, but the cost is just so prohibitive. And to me, that's interesting. I'm wondering like, you know, obviously with Coinbase launching their NFT side of the platform and NFTs just continuing to get larger and larger, are we going to see kind of a second wave of NFTs, kind of these non-Ethereum chains kind of coming up a bit because the cost isn't quite so prohibitive for newcomers getting started.
Yeah, got it. Maybe switch gears just for a moment. Teach me something about, with Luna Bulls, the 3D Luna Bulls, and just the regenerative art, or whatever the term is called, where, you know, you have the different varieties. When you're building sort of an NFT project like this, like an artist that does this starts where? They start creating, what is the platform? Are you on a graphics editing software, and then you sort of import that into what? And like, what's the basic technical process you guys go through to create a system? And if it's too much, alpha to leak in terms of proprietary shit, by all means, you don't have to say too much. But I'm just trying to figure out the process as an artist. Like, how do you go from figuring out what you want to do all the way to building it out and then deploying it on a platform?
I'd say very early on, when Luna Bulls started, I jumped into the Discord with Fizzy, who's one of our head artists and head of the project. And we just were discussing from an art perspective how all the assets are made. And usually what we do, this is for Bulls, I can't speak too much to the software he uses because I know they use a mix of Photoshop and Illustrator. The first step would be to design the sort of basic outline, which is your sort of outline of your NFT and whether or not you need other outlines for certain traits. And then specifically, it's down to designing the individual traits. And so we held a lot of art competitions at the start, which would be where people interested in the project could design a trait, and then we would actually design that in pixel form and then put that in as a randomly generated trait. And so we've got a few of those from the community cycling around, and it's nice because it adds that extra level of integration as if it's sort of a community built thing. And so once all the assets are designed and once we've got the outline and everything, we basically can completely generate the whole entire collection. So we generated 10,000, and then we did 69 individual custom pieces that we sort of used for people who helped us at the start for marketing, and we did all the Terra protocol balls.
And to make sure the whole thing works, do you have to sort of deploy a mint and all of this on a on testnet first, to make sure the whole thing works, or is there a system to what is the system to create the regenerative component of it, the randomization and whatnot?
As far as the specifics go, I can't delve too much into that because I'm not overly technical myself. But you can basically use several methods to generate all the art pieces. One of them is using a random number generator, which will then just randomly assign all the traits out.
But the traits, I guess, just for folks that maybe don't understand how this works, so this is happening. You've already assigned certain smart contracts or something. And then when you mint, what's happening when you mint? What does that mean to mint something?
So you're basically just calling the smart contract and you're asking for a generated NFT. And so then that's what you receive. So every time someone then goes to mint, the NFT that they'll get, if it's a fresh mint, will be generated, and then that's what they will receive.
So it's sort of not that different from what the Tesseract does in a sense. You already have the assets built up in the background in terms of the pieces. And then the actual combo you get is generated through sort of randomness, as opposed to where the Tesseract, you get a fixed outcome.
That's specifically it. So a mint would be a sort of random generation of the artwork itself, whereas you can look at the Tesseract, aside from sort of holding it as an asset, you can look at it as a sort of key to unlocking your NFT. that also then enables it to be taken into the metaverse and be, you know, you get 3D and it's metaverse compatible as well.
So, like, do you guys envision the future that where the minting process is just part of like normal NFT culture and then part of the game sort of? Or do you foresee a future where like in like, you know, down the line, I don't even know how all the NFT projects work, but do some projects just simply like auto-generate and then just post them on the marketplace as opposed to going through like a minting process where individuals are like participating? Like, is that different?
Yeah, that, for projects? That definitely happens. I think there's many different ways to launch an NFT collection. It can kind of depend on the goals of what you're trying to build. I've seen people launch essentially, you know, for instance, collections of NFTs that are like a pass to something they're building, to like the platform they're building or the community they're building or the DAO they're building or whatever. And sometimes for those, they will do like a completely free mint just because, where they'll even try and like cover some of the gas costs or something, because they're trying, their focus is really just trying to build an initial community of people, and then they're going to do something with that in the future. Whereas there are others, and those would be similar to the Tesseract, them, but they're not like randomly generated. They're just kind of there and ready to go. I've also seen more like individual artists do exactly what you said, Sethi, and like just kind of pre-generate, you know, a couple hundred, a thousand, whatever NFTs in their collection, and then just list the entire collection for sale on like OpenSea at once or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely like lots of different ways to do it. And it kind of, yeah, just kind of depends on what you're trying to build.
But for Luna Bill specifically now, all of the possible combos like have been minted by the community, or there are still like some permutations that aren't like created yet?
So all of the combinations for the classic 2D collection have all been minted. So they've all been generated, and those are fixed. When people upgrade to the 3D, they'll then get the 3D version. But sometimes, you know, with minting, you do get like happy little accidents, as when we minted the Baby Balls collection, there's actually one of the rarest Baby Balls is actually the very last one to be minted, number 10,069, and it actually has the trait of having the blue sword, which is one of the rarest items for the Baby Balls, but doesn't actually have it in the picture. So it's a sort of one of one unique glitch.
Like, so, you know, that's kind of nice. Got it. Yeah, like it, on that same sort of like lineup of like adding rare, I guess, features to your Luna Bull, like, do you guys like foresee like maybe in the future there's like pieces that you put onto your bull or like either traits or something that like fit with a concept of like, you know, you solve a like a puzzle, or you go, there's like a gamification component and you have to sort of like go through certain interesting steps to sort of get to those, you know, because it's one thing to just sort of show up and like I'm gonna buy say a Tesseract or whatever, but like, is there a concept of, you know, measuring something on the NFT that is specific to say like engagement in the community or something like that, or gaming in the community?
Yeah, I mean, I can go ahead with that one, guys, just briefly, because I think that there's a few different ways of answering that question, but I'll go with the one that I think is probably more relevant to where you're headed. And that is that, certainly adding, we can't do anything to the NFTs now in terms of changing the metadata of the NFTs. That's not possible. So what we can do, though, is we can add value to the existing NFT, for example, by airdropping add-ons to the NFT. Pretty similar to what we've done with the Tesseract. So you own that NFT, you have the original, although we can't do anything to change that for you. We can't make that any more rarer than it is, or any more common, than it already is. But what we can do is we can airdrop you additions or add on extras to that NFT, which go hand in hand, for example, which then potentially, and it is something that, you know, we have spoken openly about in our community, that we have spoken with other protocols about adding adding value to the NFTs in that way. So for example, you know, okay, I'll just pull a name out of the hat here. We're potentially not going in that direction, but I'll just say, for example, you know, you own your Luna Ball, you go into Apollo, and you, you know, you, because you're a Luna Ball holder, it recognizes that fact, and you get, you know, some benefit for being a holder of that NFT in that case. So yes, yeah, certainly in that sense, we can explore, and we are definitely exploring adding additional value to existing NFTs by you know, airdropping additional NFTs, which will then, you know, coincide with the original. Yeah, so it is something we are looking at for sure.
Yeah, because the reason I bring things like that up is because this was like a constant problem in the gaming space where, I don't know how to like, it's hard to kind of cover it all in a brief statement, but we used to have problems with sort of item inflation for starters, where like, for example, if let's say you have the 2D and then you have the 3D and then you have the animated and then you have the whatever, the question is, does that in some way improve the value or utility of the original 2D bull somehow? Or does it detract yeah. from it by actually creating sort of like the next best thing, sort of like what we used to call mudflation in the video game world? Or I don't even want to get into all the definitions there, but like basically you would have this kind of issue where like the new shiny thing became the thing everyone wanted, but the older thing, you know, like bringing value back to the original was always difficult. Whereas I think in the NFT space, like the rarity element of having the original pieces seems really interesting to me, where you can maybe avoid that, but then continue to develop ways to like engage the community with new products and exciting new art or whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely been the topic of conversation over the last few weeks and months that we, you know, who knows what direction occasionally your NFT project is going to take, because, you know, it's very much community driven in that sense. And, you know, who knew that, you know, a group of individuals were going to concentrate on a not particularly rare trait within the collection and then build out a sub community and you know, a micro economy within our existing economy. But that happened, you know, that's the power of community in that sense. And I think
actually, I was actually wanting to get back to exactly that question real quick. Maybe you could like describe mm-hmm. like how many people were we talking about? Like, for example, when people were submitting art ideas and people were actually doing artwork and bringing that in and showing their, like you mentioned, like there was sort of a competition, like what kind of engagement was that? Like how many people are we really talking about?
The engagement initially, well, Guy could probably answer that, but the engagement was pretty huge, wasn't it, initially? It was a couple of thousand, a few thousand people.
Yeah, the engagement at the start was really, really big. And you could tell that, I mean, like we had all sorts of applicants from where someone had just scribbled on a bit of paper what they thought they wanted to look like, and whereas someone had literally jumped into Photoshop and spent hours and hours making this design. And part of the fun of that was we let the community decide on one of the traits that they wanted. And, you know, we picked some on the team. So it really sort of was a communal effort in building the project itself. And I think when the people who basically won the competition, who got their traits made, when they saw those for the first time, I think it's, you know, when you envision a piece of artwork and then it's actually minted on chain and it's there in front of you and you can see it on your screen, it's sort of, I don't know, it just becomes a little bit more real. And I think there was definitely that really exciting buzz we had in the community at the start when we were launching. And I think like things like, you know, trait competitions and basically making it as much everybody else's project as ours sort of really helped us, you know, get off on the right foot.
Yeah, there's maybe on a slightly different subject. What do you guys think of sort of like, and I have sort of mixed feelings about this particular thing, but like the idea where like NFT projects create like these sort of specialty NFTs that are specific to say like, you know, one sort of like OG community member or something like that. Like, you guys think that's a good idea to do or not? I know, I think some people had some of those. I think if I've seen some people's Luna bills, I'm just curious, like, what that discussion looked like in terms of making decisions about doing that or not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, that was very much a marketing decision that we made in the early stages, and I think a pretty effective one at that point. I mean, I think it's important to, you know, from two angles, really. One, obviously, you want to honor those people in the community that have brought value, many of them that bring value to our community, yourself included, do this off of their own back in their own time, and they don't get anything back for it. You know, they're not getting paid for this. You don't get paid for the spaces that you put up for all of us. And I think occasionally, you know, if you've got it within your power to, you know, give someone, you know, an NFT and say, look, you know, we've just produced a one-of-one NFT for you because we love what you've done in the space, and in the same sense, you know, drive a little bit of value towards your project in terms of marketing, then, you know, we would be fools not to do that, really. And I think it worked out really well for us. I'm really happy with mine.
Yeah, and in full disclosure, like, I didn't really ask for anything to do this. I just think it's, like, fun to just, like, chat and learn. And the guys were like, hey, you know, like, do you want to, like, a Tesseract? You know, we could send you one and you can sort of play with it. And yeah, I was kind of like, but I'm kind of reluctant about that. Not because
I'm reluctant
about it because, like, I'm not particularly like here to make money on NFTs, nor do I particularly want to be sort of like, you know, I just want to be described as that. It maybe that's just my personality or whatever. I have a few people, because I just started doing these spaces, I have, like, various projects come up and like, how much do you charge for doing they're actually asking, like, for what kind of monetary compensation I expect for, like, spending an hour or two in a space. I'm like, well, you know, I'm not really interested in that. And so because the problem is that then like it's hard to stay maybe objective, perhaps, and maybe it's also hard to in other words, if I get associated with one specific thing, then it's almost like it's hard for me to like engage with other people who are interested. So I'm trying to be more the casual observer than maybe an active participant, if that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I think there's no one in there. As I said to you when we were talking on DM, Sefi, I don't think there's anyone in the entire community that thinks that you would, come on and shill an NFT project for the price of a JPEG. Well, I mean, come on.
The thing is, I noticed is, like, it almost doesn't matter what you did in the past. Like, what ends up happening when these, like, I'm looking at my follower account and this thing, and the thing keeps going up. I'm like, shit, well, I didn't really expect that to get that big, nor am I, like, really doing it for that. And then, you know, I'm not trying to monetize a Twitter account. And the thing is, the bigger the account gets, the weirder it gets, because then, like, it's harder and harder to sort of, like, engage with individuals, you know, because you make a comment or you talk about something, and then all of a sudden you have, like, a gajillion like replies, and you'd like to reply to everybody, then you realize, wait a minute, you can't do that, and you don't have the time. Then you get into sort of like, so what ends up happening is like some of the features that make you like early on, and you can just sort of be yourself. The bigger these stupid accounts get, the more like, the more careful you have to be about what you say, and you have to kind of, you know, you don't want to like come across as, because I guess my point is the newcomer who follows you today, and this is true for Luna Bulls or anything else, they don't know necessarily your past credibility, and they don't know how, they don't have the time to research that. They don't, right? Like they don't, for example, if I'm coming into Luna Bulls today, I am asking you questions about the past of the community, the history of it, and I don't know the slightest thing about what gives Luna Bulls its credibility, right? So you're almost like fighting to build your name, like as a project, almost every single day. Like you can't really like rest on your laurels, or what happens is people can say almost anything, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, from my point of view, I wanted to, because I've, you know, had a connection with yourself and the spaces that you've provided into our community for quite a long time. And I just thought that it would be interesting for us to explore avenues of investment and look at potentially NFTs as a store of value, other than just simply looking at crypto assets, which I know you do, and obviously you do really well. And I think for the most part, I mean, we all love listening to that. And I just thought, well, what an interesting road for us to kind of stroll down together, you know, and have a conversation about potential investment opportunities and looking at NFTs as a store of value, as opposed to just and I knew you didn't really know a great deal about it as well. So for me, it was a great opportunity for you to be completely neutral in your questions, and for us to kind of give you our a real good picture about, you know, what it is we're doing and how we think it adds value to the community Terra as a as a chain as a whole. Certainly from a store of value point of view.
As a separate little fun game, maybe take the Tesseract or whatever that you guys had kind of like earmarked to give me or whatever, like maybe make a little like contest or something and like just give that out to the community. That would be great. Like, so that, because if I'm going to figure this out, like I'd almost rather just buy my like own stuff as opposed to like being given something. That's just my feeling.
Totally cool. It's incredibly generous of you to suggest that, and I think the community will be absolutely over the moon.
I have no idea what one of these things is worth. By the way, I have no idea what the price is. So I may have given away who knows how much money. So I don't know what.
On to the end of that, Sefi. Sorry, I know you said that you wanted us to give away that Tesseract, but now is just a perfect time to just remind everybody that, you know, for every mint that goes on the public mint, it's basically an entry in to win the rank 35 Luna ball that we've got, which is valued at over 135 Luna at the moment. So
how does one do that exactly? Like, what's happening there?
So if you go to the public mint on our website, on the Luna Ball's website, for every Tesseract that's minted is basically like an entry ticket, and we're just going to look at all the transactions and just randomly award one. It's sort of, we thought, you know, we haven't done a giveaway that big, and it's a real sort of grade A piece. So I just wanted to chuck that in there when you said you want to mint your own Tesseracts.
Yeah, interesting. Cool. Yeah, hopefully everyone's paying attention to that. So how does one receive the lottery piece, sort of? Is that something that just shows up in your wallet if you happen to be a Luna Ball owner
we're basically just scanning all the transactions, and the winner will have it just deposited to we'll send it out basically.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Any other comments regarding like the title of the space, which is kind of the ideas regarding sort of NFT investment?
Yeah, I mean, I was keen to touch on that with you, because I know this is kind of more your bag, really. And I just thought, you know, it was interesting. I was looking at a few figures yesterday, and I think it was back in November 7th or 8th, BTC was trading at around 69K. I think it's all-time high. And, for example, Bored Apes, BAYC, was trading at an average purchase price of $125,000. And when you look now, 3 months later, I mean, BTC were trading down at around 44K, so around 35% from its all-time high. 35-40% from the all-time high of 69K, and now ranging, between 35-40% negative from the all-time high that we had. And on the other hand, the average purchase price for a Bored APR club is around 327,000 now. So, I was just wanted to sort of explore that a bit and look, Bored Ape Yacht Club, perhaps not the best example because it is a huge exception in the space, let's be honest. But I mean, when you think about, I've got some data here from all of the NFTs traded.
Why do you think that became sort of an exception? Like, what was the feature set or like community or whatever, the organic growth that made that what it was, just as a point? What's your opinion as far as like analyzing that, or do you know enough about it to tell either way?
I come from Ethereum originally over to Terra, but certainly in 2007, CryptoPunks got their name because they were, they marked themselves as being the original NFTs in the space. What Bored Ape Yacht Clubs did, I think, was just supreme marketing and utility, something that Cyberpunks didn't really do or think to do, and I think that they were just first off the bat with that. So they really were supreme in that sense, ahead of the game in terms of marketing and certainly, you know, celebrity endorsements and pushing, you know, looking at what they could actually do with the NFTs over and above digital collectibles. And I think that's what gave them the edge in that. Certainly the edge between, cyberpunks, I said CryptoPunks, certainly gave them the edge between CryptoPunks and Bored Apes was the fact that they explored utility and, you know, invested more heavily in marketing at that point.
So they actually, like, you know, put forth some kind of like funds in order to sort of like, what did they do? Send NFTs to celebrities? Or like, how did they get that kind of interesting, you know, that like, what did they do exactly? How did they do that? Like they advertised or what?
Yeah, I think the attraction from the celebrity point of view. I mean, if you could tell me, that would be awesome because I would love to apply that to our project as well. Certainly, they had great success with that. But I couldn't honestly tell you exactly how the celebrity interest in that project came about. But certainly, their activities in the physical world, you know, setting up parties and you know, setting up private pop-up clubs and pop-up clubs for holders, for Bored Ape holders and things like that in the physical world probably gave them more of an edge than other projects at that time, certainly.
Yeah, super interesting. I can't tell if that whole thing is a good thing or a bad thing, but that's like I'm still sort of like in my head wondering what that's all about as far as like. But, you know, celebrities and rich people are going to do what they do. And that's just, I guess, you can take advantage of that. I guess it's great, but.
Definitely. I mean, I think they were one of the first, mainstream NFT or, you know, larger NFT projects to partner with mainstream companies, for example, like Adidas. And, you know, they really pushed out the marketing and explored new territories, whereas other projects weren't really doing that at that time. So they did well in that respect.
Like we don't have that much, at least in the Western world, I haven't seen a whole lot of like really terror related anything in the media, in the general media, in popular culture. The terror just sort of came out of nowhere for people, I think, in the West. And it almost seems like there just hasn't been enough time to build sort of like a large, maybe wallet base, perhaps. How the NFT marketplaces and systems ultimately bring sort of more people to Terra in general is really interesting to me. I think just like if you look like at one of these spaces, for example, like it's pretty obvious when you see someone with either a Luna Bull or a Galactic Punk or whatever, it becomes immediately obvious that this is a person that is sort of involved with this community. Like, you know how sometimes we get trolls in Twitter space, they just show up and just talk shit. You can tell immediately it's probably not a troll if they have, you know, an NFT from our chain, right? It's almost certain that their credibility is going to be higher. It was something interesting that I've noticed.
I would just say on the end of that, you know, Terra NFTs, we make up 0.4% of the whole entire NFT space, which is, you know, insanely tiny when you think about it. And there's this meme that, you know, a lot of people parrot around in crypto saying we're still early. And, you know, we wouldn't be here if we didn't think that that was the case, especially with Terra and the NFT space. You know, we're all fans of Terra because, you know, UST is undoubtedly the best stable coin. It's, you know, the only proper decentralized stable coin. And so we think as long as, you know, UST succeeds, what that's going to do is that rising tide is going to pull up all the ships with it. So, you know, not only Luna Balls, but other NFT projects on Terra also then get that spotlight. But as far as the NFT space goes, this is still really, really early days. And as far as a sort of celebrity like reps and celebrity investments go, I'd say, you know, mainly you have two types. You have the celebrities who are actually genuinely interested in the tech or genuinely interested in what blockchain can offer. And then you get the others whose agent suggests to them it's a good idea if they buy an NFT because they can put it on their Twitter and it will get them some more followers. So I really think, you know, us sort of converting more and more people with a bigger platform to sort of, you know, explore NFTs in this space, I think that's a really good thing. And I think that us being on Terra, like especially this early, like especially with UST's MCAP, I think, you know, like, that this still is really early days, and I think we're on the best platform for it.
Yeah, there's no question that, like, on the sort of, like, you know, influencer side of things or whatever you want to call it, yeah, there's no question that like the NFT has kind of a look at me sort of element to it. And the idea is, like, well, when you're when people are either looking for followers on Twitter because they just want to do this, you know, the image that they present sort of like brings that community in pretty quickly. I did notice there are some people that are in, they have like multiple, of course, NFTs they like to like put on their Twitter profile, for example, and they'll just swap them periodically, I guess, to kind of maybe either just like be able to play with them from time to time, but also just to maybe like show their support periodically for the different projects. Maybe speak to that. Like, how many people tend to use like the one NFT and that's just reps them forever versus people that like swap out a lot? Like, what's that whole scene looking like?
Yeah, generally, it's, you know, we have the same NFTs, myself and Guy, and team members and community members. So you can usually, you know, draw definition by the fact that that person either is engaged in that community, is a kind of an OG member of that community, so they rep that NFT consistently. That's the story behind why I, you know, constantly have mine displayed, obviously, because, I want to represent my, you know, project that I represent in that sense. And I think everyone else feels the same. And from a collector point of view, you know, if I wasn't involved with Luna Balls, then certainly I would be switching mine up all the time, because you want to show off all of the other NFTs you have in your collection. And I think that's one of the cool things about them, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting on Twitter, because you only have one profile pic, but it's almost like a Twitter feature that might be an update would be like, if you hit someone's profile pic, you know, you have like a collection of images you can see or something. Like, maybe that's an interesting Twitter upgrade. Like, because like there's so many people that want to show different elements of themselves or, you know, express their like project interest, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when we're sort of looking to enter the metaverse later on the year, like with Luniverse, one of the things that you can do inside that is build your own gallery. So you can display sort of NFTs from other projects there, your favorite ones, you can spotlight them, move them around and stuff. I think that's definitely something we're really excited for.
And this is on what platform you're looking at?
This is on Luniverse. So Luniverse is a metaverse that's currently being built on Terra right now. They're launching, I don't want to say anything about their launch dates, but they're launching initially San Francisco on a one-to-one scale. You can buy buildings and stuff, and they're launching Vegas soon, but Luna Balls will be integrating with Luniverse when they launch eventually.
Are they sort of importing like 3D maps, mesh maps, and then like creating like you know, environment around that? Or
without steering it too much to sort of a Luniverse based thing, they're doing one-for-one photorealistic maps of cities, but then you can also, you know, buy buildings and stuff. We've got a Luna Balls HQ building sort of already picked out, you know, many floors and stuff, and we can do things like, you know, hold parties and get a DJ and stuff like that, and you can enter as, you know, as your metaverse compatible character, which for us is the 3D Balls.
So the 3D Balls right now, besides having a 2D representation on a flat page, the 3D Balls like can be imported in an actual 3D format into that particular game? Or do you have, is that like something that could theoretically go to multiple sort of like 3D metaverse type games?
Yeah. The actual 3D NFT that you get now, that's not in itself compatible with the metaverse. But what it does do is it's a gateway. So it will give you the fully 3D rendered game ready version of your 3D ball.
Gives you your mesh character, so you can run around and have fun in the metaverse.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, the mesh character is like tied to your like NFT hash or whatever, right? So by owning this, and you would do what, like just and like connect your wallet to that, and then next thing you know, like you can import in your 3D representation. Yeah. Is that how it would? How does the mechanic of that theoretically work?
Well, the specifics of the integration we're actually working on right now, that's the plan at the moment. Is your 3D version will basically give you your sort of 3D character. It'll unlock that for you, and then that's what you can use to enter compatible metaverses and stuff.
Got it. So like development team wise in the background, like you guys have sort of folks from all walks of.
From all over the planet, and we all come from different backgrounds, and we're all in different time zones. So it makes to a good conducive work experience.
Question about the team, and just jumping back for just a moment, but like, so is most of the development team, say for example, Lunables, is this something you guys have like people that are hobbyists, more like, you know, or doing this as like a like literally a full-time job now, or like what's that look like right now as far as the community is, the tech community that's building Lunables?
You want to do that one, Cole?
Put me on the spot. I think, you know, for the most part, most of us in the team at this stage are involved pretty much voluntarily. We are all passionate about the project and passionate about the project being profitable at some point in that sense. Not that it's not profitable now. I don't want to say that, obviously. But you're referring to the fact as to whether or not we're employed full time. Is it our full time job? Are we, you know, committed? But in that sense, I am personally full time within the project. But as I mentioned, you know, at the moment, pretty much voluntarily, as is Guy, as is O'Hara, who you spoke to earlier. And we are just at the moment, concentrating on building out a DAO. You know, we've got our Bull DAO, which we're working on, and concentrating on, building up the financial aspect of the project going forward in that sense. So, yeah, that's where we are now.
But I'm
a hobbyist. I'm a collector through and through. I was a collector first and foremost before I got into this project. So that's where I came from. And I think Guy too. I think he was a passionate NFT guy before he came over. So that's what we were about.
Because there's kind of like two ways I think about it. One is from the perspective of like, if it's not like just when things are not done purely for some kind of like commercial gain. You know, there's a slightly different, I guess, art kind of credibility angle to that. On the other hand, there's the flip side that when you start adding utility and like future elements to an NFT project, like it would seem to me that outside of like, yeah, volunteering and everything else, it seems to me like there is a lot of time involved and therefore and a lot of work involved. And then the longer term view, like, yeah, with a DAO, is the question is like, how do you continue to fund those activities if, you know, people don't have the, you know, volunteer time or whatever, right? So so sustainability sometimes just results in the need for specific funds, but that can vary a lot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the goal is for the project team to be remunerated, for the efforts that they put into the project going forward. But at this point, we are just focused on making the project as successful as possible and not really concentrated that heavily on the financial side of it, the personal financial side of it, I mean.
Yeah, I get it. And obviously, like, the good news is most of the people that have been in this project probably have been in Luna during its like price rise. So the reality is like a lot of people are probably doing pretty well, assuming yeah. that they were in the Luna space fairly early, and therefore maybe that provides some degree of perhaps financial freedom in its own right, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for myself, I mean, this is very much a passion project for me. Absolutely. I mean, I'm nearly 50 years old. You know, I pretty much hung up my boots a while ago. So, you know, I am absolutely involved in this as a passion project, and I enjoy it. And, you know, and it's something that I love doing, other, you know, over and above making money, you know, I'm invested in Luna, and I'm invested in the Terra chain, and I'm, you know, I make my money in those areas. I'm certainly, you know, that's what I'm more sort of interested in on that side rather than on the, you know, the NFT side. So to speak on this, I can't speak for Guy. I mean, I don't know your situation, Guy, but I assume like myself, you know, this is very much a passion project for you as well.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I've been involved in Luna since the tail end of 2020. So, you know, luckily I've been in a position where I can, make sure that I'm remunerated in my daily life through, you know, various farming and bits that I'm doing on the side, so that I can pretty much concentrate and give all my time to the project. I think, you know, just to tack on to that, a couple of us went out to DecentralCon in Miami at the start of December, at the end of November, and that was absolutely amazing to go out there, you know, to meet all the people and stuff. But it was things like that you know, we didn't need to necessarily dip into anything too much. We could go out there, we could meet all the new people, we could network and stuff, and yeah, it's just really, really good. And like I say, for me, I'm personally in a space right now where I can just give 100% commitment to this. And I wake up every single day with a smile on my face that, you know, I get to be fortunate to be part of this community and you know, building on Terra.
Yeah, that's like the beauty of Web3 in general, is like when you have essentially accumulated a reasonable amount of yield bearing assets, then it just creates a certain type of financial freedom. And yeah, I was thinking about this quite extensively from the NFT angle. You know, people keep asking, like, what is the, like, utility of, you know, NFT, and do we really need DAOs and this and that? And, you know, some of the sort of, like, infrastructure that I was sort of talking to different developer teams about, I was sort of, like, looking at this from the perspective of DAOs and NFTs and how to create the right kind of sort of maybe automated trading products, if you will, to create systems that projects can use to have a, like, reliable funding source that goes beyond, say, for example, just anchor yield, or goes beyond just the yield of Luna, for example. So, like, you know, I'm looking at all of these elements, the different types of projects and how they need to be funded, and trying to figure out how to build that on chain, because, you know, on chain you don't have to worry about, like, money leaving the system and coming back. It's transparent for everybody, so that's really important. And I think I have some ideas that'll get us there. And we're sort of, like, you know, I'm trying to get different protocols to sort of build that sort of DAO friendly, like, an NFT friendly projects that you could basically create systems that, for example, like, if you bought an NFT, like, the NFT itself could be yield bearing, and then have that additional value like, component to it. So just really interesting ways, like, permutations to mix NFTs and DeFi, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's certainly an avenue that we are exploring at the moment. Revenue generation and yield bearing, you know, in terms of application to our NFTs, is something we're looking at. We've been looking at for a long time, but we just thought at that early stage that we would, we decided to go down the creative route and head more towards the metaverse and sort of metaverse compatibility for our NFTs. And now we obviously now are really concentrating on and focused on building out the DAO and building out potential sort of, you know, yield bearing components in terms of our NFT projects. So yeah, we're definitely, you know, we're a really open team. We're really open to community suggestion, and we're really the type of team and type of individuals that we come together and we brainstorm, and we you know, we take in a lot of input from our community and a lot of direction from them as well, because they in turn they put a lot of trust in us too. So yeah, it definitely it works very well.
Yeah, for all of the rage about, like, you know, trustless money and decentralization, there is something to be said about like centralized actors that you can trust. And, you know, it's one of those things like, what, you know, once you once a situation occurs where you break the community trust, it's almost impossible to get back, as we've noticed with like the abracadabra situation or whatever that's going on there with so, you know, it is really it's just always an important like element to this.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, without a doubt. That's why it's really important for us at the moment to concentrate on building out our DAO and obviously bringing the community in. We do a lot within our community. They contribute a lot to the project. We constantly run an open forum and regular AMAs and VCs, constantly taking in, you know, input from them in terms of direction of the project. It is difficult, though. I mean, I must admit, you know, I have this conversation a lot with guys from the community that, you know, we want to give them all of the information that about everything that we're working on, but in the same sense as well, we also have to remember and consider that we're working in a very competitive industry. Terra is a really small chain, and there's actually a lot of NFT projects now starting to emerge on the chain. And although we concentrate and we also help to empower new projects come into the chain, but we also have to remember that, you know, we are in business after all, and we also have to remember that a lot of the things and that we work on behind the scene, we have to be a little bit guarded of as well, you know, in a sense. So we try and give as much as we can to the community in terms of direction of where we're heading, but we also try to retain some of that detail as well, so as not to give it out to competitive projects and, you know,
so you see our ideas as the core team. You guys kind of see yourselves as having kind of a fiduciary duty, I suppose, to the corporation leadership would have in a traditional corporation. So, like, you look at it as like a fiduciary duty to make sure that like people's investments continue to have meaning, and that integrity, mm-hmm. and then also the concept that you don't want to give away all of the secrets that are going to make the future Luna Bulls amazing. Even if it's just like brainstorming, that way, you know, like, people aren't just taking all your ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You hit a nail on the head. I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, Guy, but
I was just going to say, yeah, it's a very delicate line with sort of with the community and like leaking alpha and stuff. And I think usually, you know, like, we have the verified holders channel Discord on our thing. So, you have to be a verified Luna Ball holder to get in there. And there's various things that we can do, you know, to tease bits of information as well. But we do, you know, at the end of the day, have a responsibility to the project. You know, I'm invested in it myself. I've bought a load of Luna Balls and stuff. And, you know, like, we're all invested in it. And I think, you know, protecting the community as well, it's definitely about getting that right line between, sort of, you know, you got to keep some cards close to your chest. And I think we do a good job of sort of delicately balancing it out, but, you know, it's quite a lot of fun to leak alpha every now and then.
Yeah, of course.
So getting the response to alpha leaks is quite fun, but yeah, just got to sort of, yeah, play it by ear.
You know how these things can go on forever, but we're about an hour and 15 minutes. Any kind of like things that we've missed that you guys want to mention or get out to the community, either way?
On the note of
I would say, you know, just reiterating on the title again, NFTs as investment assets, just something to reconsider from, you know, all of our personal perspectives. The NFT space is blowing up, and whether that's, you know, an NFT that you hold, that's say an individual art piece that is the NFT itself, or the NFT is just a token and it's a utility to unlock something further. I think this space is, you know, it's booming. There's literally billions pouring into it every single day. So, and I definitely think the NFT space on Terra is very young. It's very early. I would encourage everybody to, you know, if you don't have, just pick up one off the floor. Go find a project you like, pick up a floor NFT, whatever it is, and just hold on to it. Something that speaks to you personally or a project that you're very connected with, I would I'd definitely say, yeah, the NFT space on Terra is really, really early, just to touch on the title again.
Yeah, well, while we were chatting, by the way, I went through, so I'm sitting here playing around on Random Earth the entire time, just kind of like looking at the search capabilities of the platform and just looking through the various like variations, like outfits and whatnot that the various Lunables have. And it's like pretty interesting experience to sort of like find the one that like maybe speaks to you in the, you know,
yeah,
like,
it's quite fun, I find, just sort of going through the filters and looking at all the traits and stuff. One thing I will quickly segue in, because I don't think we mentioned it, especially with the Lunables very early on, one of our sort of most established sub-communities is actually the Iced Out team. And whilst the Iced Out trait, say for the Lunables, isn't particularly the rarest, what they've done as a group is sort of they've got buying power of you know many individuals, and what they've done is they've managed to build out their sub community, which now includes you know like a DAO, and that you know they hold their own NFTs and everything. But the membership to access, if we're talking about just purely from investments, if we're talking about the membership fee, I'm looking at Random Earth the minute. The cheapest Iced Out Lunable is currently sitting at 350 Luna. And so from if you're talking about just from, you know, an investment perspective, if you see an individual group, especially one like Iced Out, who are doing great things within the community, you know, you can look at the individual pieces and of the sub communities as investments, because a lot of the Iced Out guys have sort of done quite well for themselves. But, you know, on the flip side, they've built out this really cool community space. And yeah, just want to say, well, while we're on it, big thank you to the Iced Out guys and everything they've done. But, you know, that's hey, not quick, also to...
Like, quick question for you, as a total noob here. So I push the little Iced Out button on the outfit, right? I guess that's where you discover mm-hmm. your Iced Out bulls. Mm-hmm. And then it says 152 total items at the bottom. Are those... And some of these bulls have like a price listed next to him, and some of them are blank. Does that imply that, so is this showing all the possible Iced Outs, and then the ones with prices are the ones that I can actually that are for sale?
It. Yeah, so there's 152 Iced Outs in the whole entire collection, and at the moment there are only 6 for sale. So that means that there's 146 Iced Out holders who are holding them. So it almost becomes like a status ticket in, you know, buying your way into the club, because you get access to all the extra things that gives you. But, you know, that's not, we've got many, many sub communities on in Lunables. You know, I don't want to name them all, because I'm going to forget one and the rest are going to, you know, feel a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not saying go out and buy an Iced Out.
Yeah.
I'm just sort of like trying to understand the, but what happened here is that the Iced Out like folks sort of just
it's collective buying power. That's what
they
is.
They just started buying them, and like that just sort of drove up its own price.
That's
but
it.
Like,
and
Iced Out itself. Side. I guess my question is, Iced Out itself though was not necessarily like preemptively decided upon as being more rare, or was it more rare to begin with?
No, it wasn't. And if you actually look at the rarity traits, there are a lot there, you know, there's a few things that are traits or individual ones like bulls that are rarer, or there's collections of bulls that have less. It's just that these community members sort of decided to club together. They all thought, oh, you know, these NFTs are really, really good. And for their efforts in building out that space, you know, if you want entrance to it now, you're going to have to pony up a significant amount of Luna. But, you know, they're doing great stuff within their community. So it's, you know, it's a delicate balance, but I think they sort of, you know, hit the nail on the head as far as that concerns. But I will say, you know, there are loads of other sub-communities to check out who are all sort of doing really good things. So it's definitely an exciting space.
So it's like basically the outfit sort of became the basis for...
That's it.
Like
yeah.
That sort of sub community. Is that true of like some of the headwear and some of the other stuff I'm looking
yeah.
at?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, so, give me some examples of that. Like, just for my
okay,
like,
okay.
ability to peruse
wanna,
this concept.
I don't want to miss anybody out. So
right. I mean, just an example.
Okay, we'll pick one. Let's say the hotheads. So all the balls with the flaming horns, or the horns with you see the sort of electric, like the electricity going around it. So they formed their own community of like the Hothead Society. So yeah, there are different communities built around different traits and different outfits and stuff. And it's really good because, you know, you get these, you know, everyone's sort of in it together. We all own something similar. And again, it's that collectivism. It's that sort of human need to want to be part of a club, you know?
Yeah, it's a micro economy within an economy, which is awesome, in my opinion. It's amazing what they've accomplished, to be fair. Really clever.
Interesting. Yeah, like, so theoretically, like, a person can go in there and, like, I guess, build, like, you could almost build a following almost for a specific subset of the NFT, and then, like,
absolutely, yeah,
and then drive your own little, like, not, you know, cult, but, you know, like, my own little micro cult of, like, subset, mm-hmm. some little, you know, section of this. Okay, interesting. Well, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, Sefi, I mean, if there was 100 of something and you bought all 100 and then listed one for 1,000, you in effect have created 1,000 Lunar Floor, you know, so.
Oh, because you've sort of like got all of the ones in there and you now only one is available. So you've sort of created your own.
It's as Guy said, it's collective buying power. Very, very usefully applied. Very usefully applied.
Yeah. I'm looking through some of these subsets just, you know, to kind of like, you know, hitting the little checkbox and making them all show up. It's just interesting how there are some of these that are like completely sold out, none for sale. And then there's like some that have maybe one or two or three remaining or something like that. Just the dynamics are pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Are you hinting at me telling you which one to go for?
No, not necessarily. I'm just sort of like, I just try to understand the concept behind like what a newbie is sort of like looking at, either as an investor or as, you know, because like, you know, like if you're totally new, right, you show up on Random Earth, you don't know, like, you know, one bull from another bull. You just think that something's just cool looking or something. That's one type of buyer. And then you have the type of buyer that's looking at something that believes that, you know, something's going to go up in value over time, right? Because you, like, even in the art community, you have the same concept, right? You have people that will just simply buy it and throw art in a closet hoping, you know, that Picasso or whatever is going to be worth something one day. And then there's the people that just they buy art to simply experience it, and they'll pay, you know, what they think it's worth. And there's different members of an art community, much less an NFT community, and you see this kind of thing all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but people speculate. I don't know if O'Hara, you were just trying to answer that. I think, did you want to?
Yeah, I was just going to comment on, like, from the newbie perspective. I remember, you know, I got started in NFTs very shortly before I joined Luna Bulls. And so for me, it was kind of exact. My starting experience was very similar to what you're sitting doing right now, Sefi, I think, where I'm just clicking through rarities, like, oh, like, why is this trade, you know, 0.5%? That one's like, you know, 8%. Why is this one rare? Trying to kind of start internalizing the differences in price that are based on the rarities. And like, once you really start diving into it, and like, you've spent a lot of time just like clicking through the rarities of different collections on Random Earth, or like whatever platform, you'll start realizing that there are like discrepancies, right? You know, like, oh, this specific trait might be, you know, 0.5% of NFTs in this collection have it, but like, you know, this one's really expensive relative to like this 0.8% rarity trait, which is like, oh, you know, maybe that's a better opportunity for me to buy in. And that could come down to many things, right? Maybe one very rare trait that only appears on a handful of bulls, or on a handful of like NFTs in the collection, maybe even though it's a rare trade, it just like doesn't look as cool subjectively to like people as another rare trade does. So it's an interesting mix of like the rarities of a collection, of like all the different traits in the collection, but then also the art of those different traits, right? And like they were saying about Iced Out earlier, it's not the rarest trait. I think it's like, I don't have Random Earth pulled up, I think it's like 1.53% or something. But which is like relatively rare, but I think like the fact that it's, you know, the Iced Out chain that has like a lot of cultural references in film and music and everything. And I think it's something that just like resonated with people, and these guys recognized that and managed to kind of inherently, through creating the community around it and just kind of the hype around it, drive up the value of that less rare trait because more people could connect with it maybe.
Hey, one last maybe question here. We could kind of close up at it from a marketplace perspective. Do you guys find that like what kind of correlation do you see with the price of Luna going up and then the buying activity subsequent to that? Are people, do you feel like people are constantly buying? Like, let's say, for example, using the yield off of their Luna. Do you feel like it's more like when the price of Luna goes up, you know, there are some sellers and they just go and like sweep the floor of these NFTs? Like, what's your take on how the marketplace behaves?
Yeah, I mean, I played around with some stats yesterday and this morning, and I was very, it was very interesting to see that when I overlaid the BTC chart on top of the NFT sales on OpenSea, there was some correlation in respect of volume traded between the two for sure. So in the busier times, when the volume was up and there were more funds flowing through BTC and the price was inevitably up, then certainly the trading in respect of what was being bought on OpenSea was up as well. One thing I would say, though, as a store of value in terms of the NFT prices, the floor prices themselves, they seem to run, run their own path. I tried to overlay some of the statistics from BTC price in comparison to floor prices of NFTs during the same period, and they just seem to do their own thing. So, you know, it was interesting for me to see that the actual value of the NFT itself didn't necessarily crash in this, in the same periods that you saw BTC crash or, hit a downtrend. And I found that was quite interesting for me to see that. So in terms of volume, then, yeah, I think people spend more money when there is more money and the prices are higher. But in terms of store of value and the floor prices, they just seem to do relatively well in comparison to the cryptocurrencies. I think I've got a really interesting stat here. One second. So the dollar value floor price for NFTs on average was $2,812 on January the 18th. And on average, they were only down 7% from their all-time high in terms of their dollar value floor price. And BTC, for the same period of time, was down 35 to 40%. So it does show you that, that there is there definitely is opportunity within the NFT space for using them as a store of value. But in terms of your original question, then, yeah, volume definitely does affect buying habit.
Yeah, I would imagine like if a person has a relatively pricey NFT, that what might happen is if they, let's say someone's over leveraged, you know how this goes, and people are like, where am I going to dig up some money to like cover, if you're on Anchor or something like that. So it would seem to me that maybe some of the sales would go up during that time, the same way like people panic sell their bonded Luna to Luna and then like lose money that way. I was just curious about that. Like, so is there like a good time to buy? Is it similarly like when Luna's down, like that's when like maybe some sales go up and that kind of thing from a buyer perspective, like what might be a good time? Cause from a buyer perspective, the funny thing is you're also like the least rich, right? When you're Luna, like for example, what's it called? A Random Earth. The stuff is sold in Luna, as far as bulls. So it's like the in theory, if someone was leveraged and they had to like sell Luna, they're the least rich at that time to buy. But at the same time, in dollar value, the price of the bull is actually cheaper at that point if you're bringing in new money. So I was just thinking about the mechanics of that and how a person that's like an investor would think this through and decide when a good time to buy is. But anyway, like that's just me like rambling on a little bit, but I just like trying to put myself in the like shoes of the buyer and when they're going to have money to pay for things and that kind of thing. Or for the seller of an NFT theoretically too.
Yeah, I think, you know, opportunity presents itself when the price is down, because as you quite rightly said, they are listed in Luna. So, you know, if Luna's valued at $55 as opposed to $100, then you're going to, and that person hasn't adjusted their Luna price on Random Earth accordingly, then you're going to be getting an NFT for half of the, you know, UST value as they originally had it listed for. So, yeah.
That's a great point. Is that what people oftentimes do? They like up the price because they're thinking of like they're looking at the sale in terms of the value of Luna, and therefore, like you said, they'll double the cost of it. Or do you find that? Or I'm sure people do all sorts of things. Some people probably just forget it and it just sits there and it's just cheaper, right?
I think a lot of people probably forget it. But in terms of listings that I've had on, I know how much I paid for the NFT, and I certainly wouldn't want to get anything less than what I paid for. So, you know, I would monitor NFTs that I have for sale, certainly on the open market. And if there is a downtrend in the value of the native asset, then I would either just pull it from them. You know, occasionally I just pull my NFTs from the market. If it is a difficult time, if there is a downtrend in the market, then I will just pull them from sale at that point and then just hold back, you know, until we are in a more sort of affluent position and people are feeling like they potentially want to spend the money, one, and two, that the actual native asset is worth a little bit more.
Cool. Yeah, hopefully this last little bit of conversation helped people like in the buying process and selling process think about, like, you know, how they're going to approach that if they're in it for the investing/trading element of it, which again, I have literally no experience with, since I bought nothing and sold nothing yet. So it's probably a good like perspective to look at. Well, anyway, it's been great having everybody. I think we could probably close up the space. I think it's super instructive for me to learn something from you guys. And I think everyone should check out the Tesseract and like what that means in terms of like a possible piece that you might want to hold versus the utility of it and swapping between 2D and 3D Luna bulls. You guys have been great.
Oh, we appreciate it. Yeah, massively. And we just, on behalf of our team, we just want to thank you for everything that you do in the space for us.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm just sitting here like bullshitting all day, so it's not really.
Well, if your bullshitting provides that much value to the community, then continue bullshitting, please, because I've seen it in as many of your spaces as I can.
Well, cool. Yeah. Hopefully you guys, learn something slightly different each time. I'll try to figure out, I thought that having this space was fun because like I can talk about something that I don't normally talk about. And
yeah, it's been cool. Something.
Yeah,
it's been cool. Yeah, really, really different. Something different for a change. It's been great.
Cool, guys. All right, everyone, have a good day. Catch you later.
See you guys.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Exploring the Tesseract, NFTs as Investment Assets with CeFi and the Luna Bulls. Recorded on Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the lunatic community. Visit OC's What We Do page using the link in the show notes to take advantage of some of their other educational resources, including weekly meetups to discuss Terra protocols, strategies, and concepts, the Terra Luna Intel Report on Telegram, and YouTube explainer videos on Terra concepts. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For terraspaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay. Checking that replay, sing along and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody want to rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker. motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, the sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around three quarters of a cent each time someone listens to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist.
You can't even say they're making pennies per play.
Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson, living in the 8th dimension. Might be worth a little mention, living in the Great Depression. Got a real regal feel, reeling in another sucker fish. Out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw shit, now you only got two left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointed too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music.
Spaces.